Joshua Fisher here, one of the lead producers for the Believe Network. We're on Believe in Celtics, and we have got Warren Shaw of Believe in Heat. We're doing a little cross pod today to talk about game four. We could get into game three because it was kind of a three of the four halves were very similar. The second half of game three, the Celtics exploded and got back into things. The Garden looked electric when Marcus Smart left. We thought he'd be, my buddy turned to me in the middle of the game, goes, he's done for 2 weeks. He comes hobbling back in out of the locker room. Our training staff, as Trae Young said, is incredible. Hits a three, the Garden explodes. Celtics bring it within one of game three, end up losing by nine, come out guns blazing. At one point, it was like 14-1. It was like 16-1. The Heat hadn't hit a shot till Oladipo. It was like 18-1, and there's 18-4. And the Celtics really had their way with him. Marcus Smart not playing and Tyler Herro not playing. And I felt curious to see how you feel, Warren, that Marcus Smart means way more to the Celtics than Tyler Herro does to the Heat. And nothing against Tyler Herro. He's sixth man of the year. He's a great shooter. And obviously there were situations where Strus, if he's cold, Herro obviously spells that or takes away a lot of those minutes. You're not getting that 0 for 7 or whatever Strus ended up with. He was 0 for 7 at a point. But I was pleasantly happy, pleasantly surprised that the Celtics came out and whopped him. But what were some of your big takeaways? Were you kind of shocked watching that first half?
Yeah, from Miami's perspective, you know, it's one of those things, especially after they know that they almost blew game three, despite having a great lead. So you'd figure they'd come out and be ready for whatever Boston's best punch was going to ultimately be. But as you alluded to, you know, it's coming out and, you know, 1 point in the first, whatever it was, 5-6 minutes, and Oladipo had to kind of quote unquote save them to get the train on the track, so to speak, was really rough. But to your point specifically, when it comes to Marcus Smart and Tyler Herro, I do believe you're 100% correct. It's a weird take, and I'll give it to you in this way. I think Boston, like, the sum of their parts are different than the Miami sum of their parts. Miami really has been playing with sometimes their 11th, 12th, and 13th guys kind of throughout the course of the season. That's how Spoelstra's kind of cultivated this roster, because they've had so many injuries. They've had COVID stuff. I mean, as all teams did earlier in the year as well too, but literally in and out, in and out, in and out. And Boston really hit their stride this year once they stopped having that inconsistency in their lineups, once Marcus Smart and Robert Williams and all those guys were starting to play consistent minutes. So for me, Miami is better equipped to play without guys than Boston technically is, and so to speak. But that doesn't mean Boston's top guys are better than Miami's top guys, if that makes sense.
No, I feel you. And you get to Boston's bench. There's a bunch of guys once you get 9 to 13. That shouldn't be seeing the court in any playoff capacity. Yeah. Aaron Nesmith, you can't run a guy. I've done it for Romeo Langford, and I'll stand by that. But outside of Romeo Langford, you can't run a guy off the court or give up on a guy too quickly. How many times have we seen, especially a guy whose bread and butter is the three-point shot? You don't want to be the team that gives up on Aaron Nesmith. He finds his rhythm, finds his shot, and next thing you know, he's scoring 15 points a game, and he's 40, most importantly, 42% from three. Which is something when the Celtics traded for Derek White, who had an excellent game, so handsy in the first half. I wanted us to somehow pry away Doug McDermott. Obviously, contracts, the Spurs felt they could contend, they get to the playoffs, but I wanted us to be in the mix with Doug McDermott too, to give us that ninth spot kind of on the bench, or 10th spot on the bench. But having Rob Will, although he went to the locker room in the game, is huge. The ability for the Celtics to play so big against Bam Adebayo, who was neutralized in this game after having an excellent game three. Rob Will, Horford, and Tatum, who's 6'10 and put on exceptional muscle, as we've seen this season. Tatum's the third biggest guy in the court for the Celtics. It's incredible the size they were able to put out there today. The defense was as good as, you know, Tatum was offensively. He got to the line so much. I mean, Brown had a horrible offensive game.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised at Brown's, I don't know, just kind of overall, just he's really struggling handling the basketball and getting into the teeth of Miami's defense. And I tell people all the time, like, he's not the dribbler he thinks he is. But at the same time, he sometimes euro steps and he's able to get by. He's able to have some acrobatic finishes. But ultimately, you know, he really shouldn't be handling the ball and should be coming off of the screens and getting stuff in action as opposed to trying to create for himself. And I think Miami's is intimately aware of that. The issue, though, going back to your earlier point, though, when it comes to Bam is, yeah, you know, Time Lord, when he's out there, really is, again, it's just another long, rangy, smart defender. Now you can't just go ahead and get by guys. I know, you know, I spoke to my guy, Keith Smith, on the Believe in Heat podcast, you know, a couple weeks ago, talking about in the bubble where Bam Adebayo took over in that final, in that closeout game, and Daniel Tice was just on his heels, nothing he could do. Tice is now the fourth big when Rob Williams is around, you know, and Tice doesn't have to play. Maybe he's even the fifth big, you know, if you're considering Grant Williams and if you can bring Tatum as a big in that lineup as well. So it just moves Tice further down the road, and Bam Adebayo cannot lick his chops and get to the rim at will, unfortunately. But he's still got to figure out his level of aggression. Miami, like a lot of teams, they run a lot of dribble handoffs, and he's not getting the requisite movement off of his handoffs and getting into the teeth of the defense the way that he has throughout the course of the regular season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they couldn't get him in a rhythm. Jimmy was off. I don't know if it was the injury he suffered last game, but he shot pretty abysmally. And it's so interesting because they got to the line and go to game one. Look how they got to the line. And you know what? Tatum had a very similar game to Jimmy had in that game, where Jimmy didn't hit any threes. Like, Tatum had like 24 in the first half or whatever and didn't hit any threes.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I mean, I've gotten discussions recently. We look at the Golden State Warriors, you know, to get ahead of the skis for the Celtics and the Heat's perspective, looking down the road, winner of this team will presumably, unless for the first time in NBA history, a 3-0 team loses the lead to the Dallas Mavericks. That team has not lived and died by the three, because that discredits them as a ball club, but their bread and butter throughout the last 8 years, when they've been dominant, has been the three ball. They've changed, quote unquote, changed the NBA. They've made the three paramount. But if you look at the three MVP candidates this year, the three ball isn't necessarily any of those guys' games. In fact, it's just like another tool. It's like their third or fourth pitch for two of them. And for one of them, it's like, yeah, every time Giannis shoots a three, the Celtics fans are pretty much up in the air out of their seats. Jimmy didn't need to score three and doesn't need to score three. But the only thing that the Heat, once they were down heavily, missing Harrow hurt them. Not having your best scorer or best two scorers be real threats from the three-point land. Oladipo was the only guy that showed up for Miami.
Yeah.
Which shouldn't have been the case.
Yeah. I mean, it's great for his overall confidence. And I think if you're listening to the telecast, and if you're following NBA Twitter as well, too, another positive sign, at least potentially for Miami, or not another, but one positive sign is, you know, Duncan Robinson got off the bench and he hit 4 of 8 from the 3-point line. And, you know, for him to continue to stay ready for Miami is a huge thing, especially if the Hero injury is going to linger throughout the course of this series. Then at least Duncan could potentially come in and then at least be the threat, because he is catch and shoot. He doesn't need a lot of space, and he's just lost a little bit of his confidence ever since being replaced in the starting lineup by Max Strus. And that's primarily because of Strus's ability, or at least want, to play defense. So I think by default, if Hero is going to miss any more time in this series, you will see you're going to see more Duncan Robinson coming off those curls and coming off those screens. And even Duncan's getting a little smarter now as well, too, where every now and then you'll see him take the ball to the rim. Every now and then he'll put, you know, two dribbles and try to elevate and, you know, get to a layup. So that is a positive sign. I think if you're the Miami Heat, like, he was 5-11, 4-8 from three. And obviously what Oladipo did, and I think the rest of it, you just throw away. Lowry didn't do anything. Strus didn't do anything. Butler 3-14. Obviously, Hero was hurt. There's not a whole lot you can take from this, especially from the starter's perspective, but at least maybe two of your bench guys gave you a little bit of something that you can build on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Celtics switched on them so nicely. Speak of Duncan Robinson's defense, I felt like every time they wanted to get Duncan Robinson on Tatum, they were able to do that. Gabe Vincent, I'll give him some credit. I felt that, you know, offensively was limited today, but I think that on the defensive end, I appreciate his scrappiness. I mean, he at least talk about Jaylen Brown having difficulties handling the ball. Gabe Vincent's been somewhat of a nightmare for him, you know, beyond the arc. But from Jaylen's perspective, follows shot great. You know, he had a good offensive rebound to get a put back in. His pull-up game is strong. His ability to get to the rack and finish is very skilled. You're right, though. He just – the two issues with Jaylen and Jason will try to shoot his way back into a bad game from three when he should be going to the rack completely. and going and getting to the line. And Jalen will out dribble himself, which is what happened a lot. And which was, you know what? It ruined his 40 point performance in game three.
Yeah.
He had an unbelievable shooting day, could score at will. But how many times were you like, oh my God, Jalen, you another turnover, another turnover. And Miami, for them to win, they got absolutely smoked and bamboozled in the turnover and rebound battle. Like, what would be some adjustments from Miami's perspective to combat that? Because it's just so, because it's, for me at least, you know, maybe this is a separate topic that we'll get into after the question. It's just such a tale of two games. Every game, one game, the Celtics blow them out, then Miami blows them out, then the Celtics blow them out. And it's just like, there's no consistency in this series. It's almost a tough one to call at times.
Yeah, no, it really is. I mean, and even in this game, while you're looking at what, you know, how abysmal Boston was in game three with their turnovers, what Boston had, what, 9 turnovers. The turnover battle was even tonight. Miami only still only 9 turnovers. They just couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. And not that that Boston was lighting things up, so to speak. You know, they only shot 40% for the game. It was just one of those, you know, Boston was more aggressive, got to the free throw line, you know, seems like 1,000 times more than the Heat did. And just, you know, the Heat were just never able to get into the flow of it. And I was on SiriusXM over the weekend and having a conversation with my guys on that too. And it was like something that you said earlier is like, well, Boston has the bigger team. But at one of the things about the Celtics that I've watched even over the years is like, they've always struggled with overall height and length. And I think they've always tried to get by on some hustle and grit that they didn't necessarily have. I don't necessarily know that they are the more physical team by them being the bigger team in this series. I think Horford and Rob Williams and Grant Williams, now they're girthy, they're very, very smart defenders. But I think what you saw in some parts of the series is where Tucker and Bam Adebayo would out tough the Celtics for some rebounds and pulling that away. And that completely flipped this evening. Like, that was completely the opposite in this. So it's one of those weird situations where I don't necessarily think the bigger team is going to be the more physical team, but there has to be a certain level of, there's a mentality that comes along with this and you have to want it. And Miami did not want it in game four. They just looked like they were content coming back here, getting to Boston and getting split, knowing they're going back to Miami and maybe they can get things on their way from there. But this is a really, really interesting series. And I think for fans, it's tough to watch because, you know, there's so many blowouts, you know, in it as well too, or so many large swings. And that's kind of not appetizing basketball to watch.
No, I mean, you don't want to sit there and think, all right, you don't want to be there in the third quarter with 6:50 to go. The game's a 15-point game, 20-point game. And you're just like looking around being like, all right, well, maybe we'll stick around because it's a game of runs. Yeah. You want to be getting into that fourth quarter and like, just as like an NBA fan and being, okay, we have a serious game on our hands.
Yeah.
I mean, game 4-3 got to that point. But game 4 didn't have that. Game 1 and 2 didn't really have that. And it's unfortunate from Miami's perspective that they were so content going back to Miami, where they're incredible and have always been incredible. But because had you swept Boston and Boston, the series is over. Do you think Miami's losing 2 of the next 3 at home? No. Spoelstra's not dropped. Jimmy and Spoelstra are not. They've been there before. And it's something you can't, there's no stat you can really measure toughness. But if you look at Miami, they're not a size, but they're a tough team.
Exactly.
PJ Tucker, Jimmy, Lowry, Bam, these are veteran dogs. I've never loved it. And I don't care what the metrics say or any kind of efficiency margins on it. I never loved the PJ Tucker big lineup where he's the 5. How do you feel about that?
Especially today. It's not highly sustainable, especially for where he needs to be, you know, where he's really trying to guard wings on the other side of it as well too. So he's not a plus rebounder. He's a physical guy. He's sneaky, you know, even in that way. And it sounds negative, but he's the guy like, hey, you get a rebound, you better keep the ball high because he's going to duck underneath you and try to pop it loose from underneath you because he knows he doesn't have the requisite, you know, verticality, if you will, to get up there and bang with that. But he's going to be physical and try to box you and things of that nature. So Miami's got to figure out some different things when it comes to those lineups. Everybody coming into the series knew that Dwayne Dedmon wasn't really going to be much of a factor. And, you know, we haven't seen him be any of that as well. They know that they got to rely on Bam and they just got to get, you know, tougher and more physicality from him. And when he's aggressive offensively, that leads to what he's able to do defensively as well too. And that all that kind of spells Miami Heat basketball in the long term. But you didn't see any of that tonight, especially with some of their shots falling short. And it was a weird thing where they let their offense dictate what their defensive level effort was going to be. And that's just not the way Spoelstra usually coaches or allows this team to behave. And then just kind of it snowballed this evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the Celtics not only shot 84% from the line compared to the Miami 57, they shot almost three times as many free throws as they did.
Yeah. Well, Heat Twitter is ablaze as a result.
Yeah, you know what, though? I mean, like, what are we – Celtics Twitter, Mavs Twitter, Golden – nobody – the away team never gets the fair shake. Or the losing team, I'm sorry, never gets a fair shake from the refs.
It's – you know, and I'll quote – I think it's Zach Harbor who said this, you know, many times. He's like, there's no rules that says that referees have to call an even amount of fouls. It's one of these misnomers that I think fans get sucked up in. And it's like, oh, well, look at that. It's, you know, it had to be unfair. And that's not what it is. You know what I mean? There's teams that are more aggressive, you know, and they deserve the aggressor goes to spoil, so to speak. But it is just kind of, it's a fan misnomer, if you will, that I was like, okay, that free throw disparity must mean the refs are cheating as a result of it. And that's just not true. So I'm glad you called that out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it. I hate to throw the players throwing their hands up. I hate when I find myself doing it. You know, you don't want to be rooting for penalties. I'm a Texas Longhorn football fan, and I've spent half my football season rooting for penalties for some break for my team. You don't want to be rooting for penalties and fouls. What's your key for the Celtics to win game five and go to do Miami game six? What's your key for Miami? And maybe what's an overall key for this to just be a good game?
Well, it was Van Gundy. I think he said like both teams are extremely well coached, right? Obviously Spoelstra should have the advantage in the coaching battle, but both teams are going to be prepared. And I saw even Udoka this evening when on mini spurts where it seemed like there was just a hint of lack of effort from Boston. And I think he even kept his starters in the fourth quarter longer than he probably would have liked, simply because he can't trust, you know, guys 9, 10, and 11 like Spoelstra does. And at that point, Miami was playing with house money. I think if you're the Celtics, you have to continue to play with the same level of aggression you came out with in game four and not expect that you're going to whoop the Miami Heat and be up 20 points at the end of the first quarter, but you have to match their physicality and can continue to keep the turnovers down. And if you're Miami, you know, at this point it's hunting, you know, when they have other guys out there, especially when Pritchard is out there as well too, but reacting to Udoka's adjustment of Tatum no longer, well, you saw it in some parts of the second half, but Tatum was moved around in action a little bit, kind of like what we're talking about needed to happen with Jaylen Brown. That's the best way, you know, for Tatum and Brown to get their shots, not just trying to go one-on-one against set defenses where Miami's able to set the wall. I think if you're Miami, you have to be prepared for that wrinkle from Udoka and then continue to get Bam Adebayo to be aggressive. This series, though, from the Miami standpoint, really could hinge on the health of Jimmy Butler. I don't really know what's going on with that. I want to kind of hear what they have to say at practice. Actually, probably should listen to the press conferences, you know, here as a recording right now to kind of even see if they're saying anything, but Miami's historically never says much about that too. But I don't think Miami can win the series if Butler is not healthy. And I know they've done a lot in this regular season with guys in and out of lineup, but the way Butler's played throughout the course of the playoffs, he needs to be the guy that we've seen, you know, more or less throughout the course of the playoffs thus far. And if he's not that, I think Miami's going to be in trouble. I don't think you can count on Victor Oladipo to beat this Boston team like Oladipo beat the 76ers team, you know, in the previous series.
Mm, yeah. Now, Brandon, we know you cover NBA in a fuller scope as well in your other podcast. Can either of these teams beat the Golden State Warriors, which let's call David Spade a David Spade? They're coming out of the West.
Yeah, I don't see it, honestly. I feel like Golden State is really, really humming right now, especially if they're going to continue to get Wiggins to play the type of basketball he is on both sides, on both ends, you know, getting double doubles and just really impacting things defensively while, you know, getting some scoring done as well too. Draymond, we know, is just going to captain the defense and do some great passing, and Curry's going to be Curry, Clay is going to be Clay. But to me, the key to that, what Warriors are doing right now is Andrew Wiggins, Kevon Looney as well. And I think both of these teams, Miami and Boston, are in for a tough one, because it doesn't seem like either one of them are going to be fully healthy in that series more than anything else. And I think that's the biggest thing, is the war of attrition that seems to be looming as a result, especially if Golden State goes on to sweep, which they probably will. They're going to be sitting back, relaxing, relaxing while these two teams continue to pound and beat up on each other and never know who's going to be in the lineup from game to game. I think that just plays into Golden State's advantage, especially being a veteran team who's done this before. What about you, man? What do you think?
I think both teams, my heart says Celtics, my head says sitting Ducks. Even if Kevon Looney doesn't play the way Kevon Looney has been playing. I've always said this about the Warriors, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson specifically. In my lifetime, they're the only two guys that I really feel confident, and no shame to T-Mac and what he did in that Rockets game. If you're in 2 minutes, if you're down nine, you could be up three. Somehow, they are that good, that quick, that explosive, and that rangy. And the ball movement that Golden State has going on right now is noticeably different than any other team that's active right now in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The way the ball flows from Steph to Klay, who's probably the best off-ball player I've ever seen, to Wiggins inside, the drop-off pass to Looney inside he had the other game was incredible, like in the paint. These guys are just firing on all cylinders. And this is a veteran. I mean, Green's got three rings. He's been to four. Sorry, been to five. Steph's been to five. Klay's been to five. Looney's got a couple rings. Iguodala's not playing, but he's there on the bench. Obviously, Kerr's been to more finals than – I think he's been to more finals than hamburgers I've had in the last year. Granted, I was, like, vegetarian for a large portion. But still, like, the guy is, like, it's incredible. And then you have guys like Wiggins who have found their home, you know? You have guys like Jordan Poole, who's an experienced young – he's young, but he was an experienced college player. So his ceiling may not have been as high as we thought or were seeing, but his floor was also solid, where he was easy to fit into this team and understand and learn from his role. Guys like Gary Payton, too, will be back. They'll sweep them, and they'll have time, because I think this Heat Celtics can go seven.
Yeah.
If this goes seven, they'll be fully healthy. They've got three guys. I mean, I don't know what will happen with Wiseman, but they have three lottery picks that really can't see the court. Like Moody and Kuminga get some run, but like Wiseman, like even if he was healthy, like they don't need him. They're about to win the title without the second overall pick.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. You know, it's frightening. And I think you laid out really great points, you know, when it comes to where Golden State is at and just the veteran leadership, they have now put in the right mix of youth to kind of give them an extra boost in that aspect, and just continue to be extremely well coached and disciplined, where either one of these Eastern Conference teams could have a chance, where I think all four teams in the conference finals are known for playing relatively good defense. Dallas is the worst of those four teams when it comes to their defense. Boston is probably at the highest end, with Miami being a very close second. I think Golden State probably third defensively. Miami or Boston, assuming they can survive each other and then get into that, Golden State does have the tendency to turn the ball over. And I think you could get into that where Golden State feels like, you know, they get really kind of lazy and cavalier and maybe even a little bit arrogant sometimes. And I think that can play into a team like Miami or Boston's hands defensively, if you can get them kind of going, spiraling down that. But the caveat to all of that is what you just said, or in the beginning of this, you know, in terms of like they could be down nine, 2 minutes, and then all of a sudden up three. Their spurt ability is the best in the entire NBA, and maybe best that we've ever seen, like legitimately.
He's the best spurt really player. Out of it. He's the best spurt player of all time. Like Curry, can you go? Like, he was having a bad game against Dallas the other game, and next thing he got 16 in the fourth. It's like, yeah,
it's scary. I've seen them time and time again play bad for 45 minutes of a game and then win the game within the 3 minute stretch. And it's like, oh, that was it. They scored 16 points in 3 minutes, and that was a game, and that turned everything around.
They never panic, they never play outside themselves. They can turn the ball over, but they really don't force themselves outside of their own games. Yeah. And they're more multidimensional, like I said earlier, than just the three ball. Draymond is such a good anchor defensively, and he plays such a pivotal role offensively in the flow of the game. Does not play outside his offensive game whatsoever, which many guys of his pedigree in this day and age when a lot of people have the green light would. I do think the Celtics match up way better. I think they'll sweep the Heat, maybe the gentleman's sweep. I think the Celtics have a better shot. I'm not saying that the Celtics are going to win this series necessarily, because there's a lot because the Heat have played two masterful games. I think smart on Curry, if he's healthy, makes things interesting. Yeah. He's the bulldog of bulldogs. And then the Jaylen Clay is fun. I don't know. I mean, I guess they have to stick Draymond on Tatum, but then they run into some trouble down low with Rob Will and Horford.
Yeah. Trust Wiggins to take care of that then. You know, I think they trust Wiggins to at least match up on Tatum, or at least continue to give him different looks. I think that's probably the best way they do handle that.
Luka is a better offensive player than Tatum, in my mind, no question.
Yeah.
I just think he's longer, though. Tatum is longer and a bit stronger. And his scoring from as he gets closer to the basket is a bit better. And I think that's tougher for Wiggins, whereas Wiggins' athleticism and speed and length gives Luka a tough time. So I think we're seeing the best version of Wiggins on defense. He's done, and still Luka's gotten his, but I think that Tatum can give Wiggins a run for his money, and not a good way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we got to see what happens. I think Golden State and sitting pretty, and they can pick apart, you know, either one of these teams, figure out which matchup they're going to have. I mean, you know, as we're recording here, they still have one more game to get past Dallas by. You know, maybe Dallas forces it and makes it a gentleman sweep. But either way, I think Golden State is going to represent the West. And then, you know, these two juggernauts, Miami, Boston, just war of attrition, man. It's been a really, really interesting series to watch from the X's and O's standpoint of it. And then just kind of understanding who's going to be in and out of the lineups each game. But the on-court basketball, I think, has been rough for fans, and the tidal waves of emotion with the blowouts and things of that nature, like, it hasn't been the greatest thing too. So, man, midway through the series, bro, see how it goes, man. See how it finishes out.
Crazy, man. Warren, thanks for hopping on. It's a pleasure joining you on the Heat show, and then, you know, us filling in the Boston show for the Believe Network. Joshua Fisher, Warren Shaw. Fans out there, hit your free throws because they're free. Don't cost you nothing. Mm-hmm.